Our next guest explores the hidden treasures of the food world in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and beyond. He says great food doesn't need to be fancy, faddish, or far away.
James Norton is a food writer, editor of HeavyTable.com, and editor of the new book, The Secret Atlas of North Coast Food. He joins us now from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio. James, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So before we get to the food, so let's tackle this term North Coast. What is the North Coast?
Well, it's half in jest, but half serious. I've got a lot of friends on the East Coast and a lot of friends on the West Coast, and you get the sense that things are going on the coast. They're very cosmopolitan. They're open to the world. And here we are in Minnesota and Wisconsin with access to the Great Lakes, which I think really opens us up to the world, and the Mississippi River as well. And if you hang out in Madison and Milwaukee and St. Paul and Minneapolis, they're very vibrant cities. You know, I don't miss Boston. I don't miss New York. I love being here. So North Coast is a term worth throwing around to sort of say, by the way, there's stuff going on in the middle of the country, too.
And the East Coast is known for the food, the West Coast known for the food. Does the North Coast stack up?
I think at this point, we still have some catching up to do. The really exciting thing is that we're doing it. I think there's really a food revolution going on in the upper Midwest. And really what it's all about is connecting our restaurants and our home kitchens and our day-to-day eating to the farms and the breweries and the distilleries and the bakeries and chocolatiers all around us. It's about connecting to where we are. I think there's been a long time sort of idea that if your restaurant's really good, you're aspiring to be Parisian, you know, you're aspiring to be in Tokyo, and people are waking up and saying, wait a second, there's fantastic meat here, there's fantastic poultry, there's world-class cheese, there's terrific beer, you know, let's embrace the stuff from right around the corner and celebrate that. And that, I think, is when your cuisine becomes an authentic cuisine and it can take its place among the great cuisines of the world. And that's what we're working on right now.
So you're out to celebrate North Coast cuisine. What are the bright spots? What do we really have to feel proud about?
I think we've got quite a bit. And the chapter that I actually wound up writing, it was about cheese and cheesemakers. And the cheese scene, particularly in Wisconsin, but increasingly also in Minnesota, is just so absolutely exciting. There's this amazing depth of knowledge and expertise going back 3, 4, 5, even 6 generations, from German and Swiss immigrants who made farmstead cheese way back in the mid-19th century to the current day. I think for quite a while, particularly the 70s, the 80s, early 90s, Wisconsin cheese was commodity cheese. You're just making giant bricks of Colby or Kojak or cheddar or Swiss. And all that artisan knowledge was still there, but it wasn't really being taken advantage of. And as milk prices gyrated all over the place, cheesemakers began looking for a better way. And they started discovering there's a lot of value that can be added by making specialty cheeses, by making artisan cheeses. And we've just seen this revolution, this blossoming in the amount of cheese available, the different varieties available, the skill with which it's made. There's just really exciting new cheeses popping up, I would say, every year around here. And if you look at the medals that particularly Wisconsin wins in national and international competitions, it can stand shoulder to shoulder with, you know, Italy, with France. It's absolutely fantastic.
And part of what's driving that, as you write in your chapter on cheese, is the personality of the people behind it. Can you introduce us to a couple of the cheesemakers you detail in the book?
Yeah, I actually wrote another book called The Master Cheesemakers of Wisconsin, and that's when I discovered that cheesemakers are kind of my favorite people in the world. But a couple that really inspired me, there's this guy named Michael Stenitis, and he's up near Cornucopia, sort of the Ashland Bayfield, Madeline Island part of the state. And he is a goat cheesemaker, and he lives basically out in the woods with his herd of goats. And every evening he goes and mixes himself a gin and tonic or a cosmopolitan, and he takes his goats on a walk through the woods so they can kind of eat all the various plants and forage as they go. And, you know, then he turns their milk into cheese. And I think that's just it's a fantastic story. It's a very old story. I'm sure people were, minus the gin and tonic, people were doing this 2,000 years ago. And he's kind of bringing us back to that. There's also some really cool innovators. Sid Cook of Car Valley Cheese is just this sort of mad scientist character. He's always trying really inventive mixed milk cheeses and rubbed cheeses and different kinds of aging processes. He'll tell you he'll take one vat of milk and he can turn it to 8 different cheeses depending on how he, you know, ages it out and otherwise handles it. It's just, you know, a really inspiring level of innovation and play and creativity taking place.
I love the beginning of your essay on cheese where you get kind of mystical about it and you say that cheese is actually alive.
Well, it really is actually alive. I think a lot of the really great foodstuffs in the world, like wine, like beer, to some extent, it changes as it ages. It changes before it gets to you. If you keep it in the fridge or keep it in the cellar, it can get better. It can get worse. It can get more complicated. And that's just like a really fascinating aspect of cheese is you've got these living microorganisms that are playing such an important role. And there's this idea of terroir, the taste of the land, the taste of where you are. And I think that can be, you know, more or less bunk. But when it comes to cheese, I think there's really something to it because what the animals are eating and the way those sort of micro fauna play on the cheese is really an important factor in the way it comes out. And sometimes you cannot make a cheese in one place that you can make somewhere else. It's not necessarily a portable art form. Where you are always kind of transforms the product.
A lot of your book covers the hidden treasures of the restaurant world in our states. What makes a great North Coast restaurant for you?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different aspects to it because I like to eat a lot of different things. One of my favorite chapters in the book was a diner's survey of South Park Street in Madison by John Kovalik. And he found some, you know, restaurants you maybe have never heard of right here in Madison. There's a place called Ichiban. Now, Ichiban is not serving, you know, farm-to-table food. It's not local cheese. It's not any of the stuff I've been talking about and raving up. There's only 2 kinds of beer, and I think they're both kind of watery. But what it is this really amazing Szechuan and Hunan dishes. They're not dumbed down. They're incredibly vibrant and challenging, and you get the Szechuan peppercorns just like numbing and exciting your mouth, and you know, just the heat from the food as well, kind of overwhelmingly, all these bright, aggressive, beautiful flavors. And that's really neat, finding those little pockets of authenticity. And whether that's, you know, a farm fresh ham and Swiss sandwich, or whether it's authentic Szechuan cuisine on South Park Street, you know, I think what I'm looking for in a great restaurant is just someone who cares about what they're doing, who really is interested in the flavor balance and does their best to get the best ingredients. And what's neat is that can happen anywhere. It can happen in a diner. It can happen in a 4-star restaurant. It can happen in a little hole in the wall somewhere. You just have to keep your sort of your eyes and your palate tuned in for it.
Well, if we're over in your neck of the woods, if we're in the Twin Cities, what is a place that you think we should check out to kind of get the real taste of the North Coast?
There's a number of them. Wow. Hit a wall there. but I'm going to give you my easy answer. There's a place called Corner Table in South Minneapolis. And the chef there is Thomas Bamer. The owner's Nick Rancone. And they just care so much. They really source their products locally and seasonally. And they take apart an entire pig and work with all the different parts of it, or an entire lamb. And so the specials are always really remarkable. They've got rabbit coming through there that's just fantastic. It's probably at this point the only place I'll order pork belly because I know they will always do it perfectly. Thomas Bamer's got this low country Carolinas cooking background, and he kind of brings that with him. And their treatment of pork is just, it's mystical. It's amazing. It is something to be seen. So a Corner Table is a great place. It's not pretentious. It's not stuffy. It's a little joint, but they really are in tune, I think, with the farmers and with the ranchers and with the flow of the seasons. And that's really important.
Reading through your collection, it seems like anywhere we go in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and beyond, there's probably some awesome food that we don't know about. When you were pulling this together, did you just get the sense like every time you looked in an area, a city or even a rural area, you were finding something awesome?
Yeah. I mean, what's really both kind of irritating and interesting about the way we travel is when we go from city to city, we get on the interstate and we just drive as fast as we can to wherever we're going. And if we're going to eat, we just pull off and, you know, we hit Culver's in a best case scenario and then we keep going. And one of the things we did in this book is we took a number of little road trips which means you get off the interstate. Maybe you actually go into the center of these little towns, you know, in Wisconsin and Iowa and Minnesota, and you see where the locals are eating. And sometimes it's a really great diner. Sometimes it's a supper club. Sometimes it's, for whatever reason, it's a Greek restaurant. It's an Italian restaurant where people have been doing things with some care for years and years. The book's origins are with Kickstarter, which is a crowdfunding website where lots of people can kind of contribute money to get a big project off the ground. And anyone who gave us $100 or more on Kickstarter, we said, why don't you contribute your hidden gem? Tell us about a little restaurant somewhere that's exciting to you, that means something to you. So we actually have a crowdsourced chapter, which is really fun. You can read 20 or so little nuggets from the people who contributed to make the book possible. And there's some really cool places, really far off the beaten path in some cases.
James Norton is with us. He's the editor of the new book, The Secret Atlas of North Coast Food.
And you can join in. Do you have a hidden treasure to share, a great restaurant or a food producer, a farmer's market in your part of Wisconsin or one of our neighbors? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. What's your hidden gem? 1-800-642-1234 or send us email at talk@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation about the hidden treasures of the food world in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and beyond with James Norton. He's editor of The Secret Atlas of North Coast Food.
And you can join in. What do you think makes for a great restaurant? Do you have a hidden gem in your part of the state? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@wpr.org. We've got a hidden gem now from John in Richland Center. John, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, my hidden gem is Karen's Supper Club in Boaz, Wisconsin. It's 8 miles west of Richland Center, right off of Highway 14, and then 171 south, about a mile.
And what makes it a gem?
Oh, she makes the best prime rib and ribeye steaks and excellent salad bar. There's like 12 things on the salad bar.
John, thanks so much for sharing that. Karen's Supper Club in Boaz, Wisconsin. And James, are there a lot of restaurants like that where people say maybe it's not everything on the menu, but they have the best blank?
Absolutely. I mean, the prime rib certainly comes up more than once. And you hear about the old-fashioned, of course, with brandy, naturally, in a number of different places. I think one of the mistakes I find with new restaurants opening up, actually I just went to a place a few days ago that had this problem. They try to be everything at once. They try to be Asian fusion and small plates and steaks, and just they kind of keep throwing things at you. And I think a good restaurant is comfortable in its own skin and knows what it's doing. And that's one of the beautiful things about some of these old supper clubs is they've got sort of a limited menu. Everyone knows the focus. They know what they're going to get. There's probably going to be pudding in the salad bar for some reason, and that's okay. I think that's great. I think it's great to have a sharp identity to what you're doing and be comfortable with who you are and what you're doing.
You're saying pudding's not a salad? Come on.
Yeah, I don't know. There are some mysterious things going on. I don't know if you've ever had Snickers salad or fudge stripe cookie salad. If you start going into the Dakotas, weird things start happening with the word salad. That's another thing we kind of uncovered in our research.
We have a Facebook comment from Shahira, who's wondering if vegetarian and vegan restaurants are on the rise in the North Coast.
I think absolutely. And more importantly than that, I think, is an awareness of or sensitivity to vegetarian and vegan eating. So I think a lot more places will be conscious of having some options that fit those criteria. And not just out of a sense of obligation, not just a veggie burger, but something really actually very delicious and well-crafted. I think a good chef is always trying to think about everyone who's going to come through the door and how to make them feel welcome, how to make them feel happy. And that's more and more a part of the conversation.
We'll go back to our callers now. We have Lucas in Sherburn, Minnesota. Lucas, hi.
Hi.
What's your recommendation?
I'm bringing my hidden gem from Minnesota, right off of I-90, in a place called Sherburn, not in Sherburn County, but in Martin County. And they did an interesting thing where our local cafe called the Cup and Saucer was out of business, and so they wanted to innovate, and they opened it up to an essay contest for gourmet chefs from Minnesota to apply and see what they could do to renovate this little cafe that's basically a gas station stop for most people in southern Minnesota. And they overhauled the cafe, and they are serving up really fantastic cuisine there now in the prairie land there where I grew up.
All right. Thanks a lot for that, Lucas. And that's kind of innovative, James, an essay contest to see who can reopen the old cafe.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, and I think what that has in common with a lot of other projects I've seen is this sense of community. You know, I talked about how Kickstarter essentially made this book possible as a community of people who were interested in the topic, all kind of banding together. More and more small independent places I see starting up will use Kickstarter or Indiegogo, other platforms like that, not just to raise money, but also to raise awareness of what they're doing, to get feedback and buy-in, to market before they open their doors. And I think it's really smart. I think you wind up opening smarter and better, and with a crowd of people already kind of behind you. And I can see parallels with this essay contest idea.
James, I want to go back to something you said earlier. You said you didn't think we were quite on par with the coast yet, the East and West Coast, in terms of food. What do we need to do to get there, do you think?
Well, I mean, I should say, I lived in Boston for about 5 or 6 years, and at this point, I would rather eat in the Twin Cities than Boston. So I don't think we're miles and miles away. One of the things that's challenging is density. When I lived in New York, you know, you've got so many people stacked so tightly. You can have a restaurant that just does rice pudding, and it can do okay because you've got such a thick mass of people that are really specialized, really passionate about one thing kind of place can make it. And that, I think we're always going to kind of struggle with that. I think our killer edge is just so much good food is grown and raised here, and we're going to catch up and or exceed what you can get on the coasts. Granting California their amazing fruit and vegetables, which I'm always a little jealous of, I think we're going to catch up on that basis, also on the basis of the terrific cheese and the terrific beer and some of the terrific fish. If you go up on the North Shore, South Shore, Lake Superior, and you get local herring or whitefish, oh my goodness, that can be just a world-class experience.
We have another recommendation for a culinary hidden gem. We have Arthur in Hub City. Arthur, hi.
Good afternoon. You guys are having a great program, and I certainly enjoy your points of view.
Thanks.
My hidden gem is a little restaurant in a town called Greenstown. It's halfway between Madison and La Crosse. And on Friday nights, they do a poor man's lobster, which is really a fancy way of saying cooking cod without the batter. And it is out of this world good.
And what's that restaurant?
Kickapoo Inn.
The Kickapoo Inn in Reedstown.
Reedstown.
All right. Thanks a lot for that recommendation, Arthur. I don't know if you hit it in the book, but fish fry. Where do you go to find good fish fry?
You know, I think that is the sort of question that you have to look within your own soul and your own family tree to find the answer to. There's so many out there, and it's so I think so dependent on what part of the state you're in. I think you really have to look for it. I've had good ones all over the place though in Wisconsin. It's one of the real joys about the state. In Minnesota, you really only get fish fries during Lent. You've got this crazy season of fish fry, and then it kind of goes away again. So you guys don't know how good you've got it.
Well, I think we should talk a little bit about wine, which is not something you necessarily associate with Wisconsin, but I guess there are starting to be more and more wineries in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa. Tell us what we're seeing here in the wine scene.
Well, we have a chapter in the book called The Curious History of North Coast Wine by John Garland. And John Garland's a really interesting guy. He actually is a judge for the Cold Climate Wine Competition here at the University of Minnesota. So he knows his stuff. He really dug into the research. And the chapter is mostly an examination of all the different things that have gone wrong with trying to do wine in the Midwest, and how just in the last 20 or 30 years, we're getting more and more skillful with sort of cold weather hardy varietals. So we can make wine from our own grapes and kind of catch up with the rest of the world. And I think there's some real promise, particularly for some of the sort of Riesling or ice wine style wines for our region to catch up. That said, I feel like we should put our chips on beer and just go for broke, because that's the culture, that's the history. But if you really want to dig into you know, why wine works or doesn't work up here. The Secret Atlas of North Coast Food has got just a really fascinating deep dive read about that.
But California is not exactly looking over its shoulder on that one.
No, and nor should they be. I think they can be pompous about that. And no one should blame them.
What other bright spots do you see in the North Coast, in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa? Emerging trends, maybe, when it comes to food.
Well, I love ethnic food, and I am surprised at how often, sometimes in very small towns or strip malls, I will find authentic, just absolutely fantastic, particularly Mexican food. In the Twin Cities, there's a great deal of Southeast Asian, particularly Vietnamese and Hmong food that is just terrific. And again, John Kovalik's chapter in the book about restaurants on South Park Street, a lot of it is just this connection with first-generation eating traditions popping up in small, unexpected places. And you don't necessarily think of it as Midwestern food, but it's really such a lovely, vital part of the scene that it's worth seeking out.
Now, part of the reason that the food of the North Coast shines is the localism movement, the farm-to-table movement. Is there any danger of that petering out and us losing some of our steam, or is this something that's just going to keep going and making us stronger?
It's just going to keep going and making us stronger. I'm not worried at all. I think if you go to France or you go to Italy, one of the reasons why the food is so phenomenal is because people have had 1,000 years, 1,500 years to figure out what their region just does brilliantly and really focus on it and really showcase it in a wonderful way. And we're such a younger country and younger place that we're still sort of stumbling toward, well, what do we do well? What is local? What can we raise that tastes fantastic? And I think the farm-to-table movement is trying to answer that question. It's in the process of answering it. And we're just going to get – I think we're going to get better and better and stronger on that front. I don't think it's a fad. I don't think it's going anywhere. I think it's absolutely wonderful, and it's here to stay.
James, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was James Norton. He's editor of HeavyTable.com. His new book, also as editor, is The Secret Atlas of North Coast Food.